Chapter 8. And so they went on chatting, and poor Margit forgot her sorrow for one little while, anyway. It was probably the only really bright and cheery hour she had known lately. I saw she liked Philip, and I knew she would. And when he told her he was studying for the ministry, I could see that she liked him better than ever. And then, when he promised to get her admitted to the jail, so that she could see her uncle, that was the capstone. He said he would give the guards a little present, and she must always go in the evening after dark, and say nothing, but just show this paper and pass in, and show it again when you come out. And he scribbled some queer marks on the paper, and gave it to her, and she was ever so thankful, and right away was in a fever for the sun to go down. For in that old, cruel time prisoners were not allowed to see their friends, and sometimes they spent years in the jails without ever seeing a friendly face. I judged that the marks on the paper were an enchantment, and that the guards would not know what they were doing, nor have any memory of it afterward. And that was indeed the way of it. Ursula put her head in at the door now and said, "Supper's ready, miss." Then she saw us and looked frightened, and motioned me to come to her, which I did, and she asked if we had told about the cat. I said no, and she was relieved, and said please don't, for if Miss Margit knew, she would think it was an unholy cat, and would send for a priest, and have its gifts all purified out of it, and then there wouldn't be any more dividends. So I said we wouldn't tell, and she was satisfied. Then I was beginning to say goodbye to Margit, but Satan interrupted and said, ever so politely, well, I don't remember just the words, but anyway he as good as invited himself to supper, and me too. Of course Margit was miserably embarrassed, for as he had no reason to suppose there would be half enough for a sick bird. Ursula heard him, and she came straight into the room, not a bit pleased. At first she was astonished to see Margit looking so fresh and rosy, and said so. Then she spoke up in her native tongue, which was Bohemian, and said, as I learned afterward, end him away, Miss Margit, there's not victuals enough. Before Margit could speak, Satan had the word, and was talking back to Ursula, in her own language, which was a surprise to her, and for her mistress too. He said, didn't I see you down the road a while ago? Yes, sir. Ah, that pleases me. I see you remember me. He stepped to her, and whispered, "Colin, I told you it is a lucky cat. Don't be troubled. It will provide." That spawned the slate of Ursula's feelings clean of its anxieties, and a deep, financial joy shone in her eyes. The cat's value was augmenting. It was getting full time for Margit to take some sort of notice of Satan's invitation, and she did it in the best way, the honest way, that was natural to her. She said as he had little to offer, but that we were welcome if we would share it with her. We had supper in the kitchen, and Ursula waited at table. A small fish was in the frying pan, crisp and brown and tempting, and one could see that Margit was not expecting such respectable food as this. Ursula brought it, and Margit divided it between Satan and me, declining to take any of it herself, and was beginning to say she did not care for fish today, but she did not finish the remark. It was because she noticed that another fish had appeared in the pan. She looked surprised, but did not say anything. She probably meant to inquire of Ursula about this later. There were other surprises. Flesh and game and wines and fruits, things which had been strangers in that house lately, but Margit made no exclamations, and now even looked unsurprised, which was Satan's influence, of course. Satan talked right along, and was entertaining, and made the time pass pleasantly and cheerfully, and although he told a good many lies, it was no harm in him, for he was only an angel, and did not know any better. They do not know right from wrong. I knew this, because I remembered what he had said about it. He got on the good side of Ursula. He praised her to Margit, confidentially, but speaking just loud enough for Ursula to hear. He said she was a fine woman, and he hoped someday to bring her and his uncle together. Very soon Ursula was mincing and simpering around in a ridiculous girly way, and smoothing out her gown and prinking at herself like a foolish old hen, and all the time pretending she was not hearing what Satan was saying. I was ashamed, for it showed us to be what Satan considered us, a silly race and trivial. Satan said his uncle entertained a great deal, and to have a clever woman presiding over the festivities would double the attractions of the place. But your uncle is a gentleman, isn't he? Asked Marget. Yes, said Satan indifferently. Some even call him a prince, out of compliment, but he is not bigoted. To him personal merit is everything, rank nothing. My hand was hanging down by my chair. Agnes came along and licked it. By this act a secret was revealed. I started to say, it is all a mistake. This is just a common ordinary cat. The hair needles on her tongue point inward, not outward. But the words did not come, because they couldn't. Satan smiled upon me, and I understood. When it was dark, Marget took food and wine and fruit in a basket and hurried away to the jail, and Satan and I walked toward my home. I was thinking to myself that I should like to see what the inside of the jail was like. Satan overheard the thought, and the next moment we were in the jail. We were in the torture chamber, Satan said. The rack was there, and the other instruments, and there was a smoky lantern, or two hanging on the walls and helping, to make the place look dim and dreadful. There were people there and executioners, but as they took no notice of us, it meant that we were invisible. A young man lay bound, and Satan said he was suspected of being a heretic, and the executioners were about to inquire into it. They asked the man to confess to the charge, and he said he could not, for it was not true. Then they drove splinter after splinter under his nails, and he shrieked with the pain. Satan was not disturbed, but I could not endure it, and had to be whisked out of there. I was faint and sick, but the fresh air revived me, and we walked toward my home. I said it was a brutal thing. No, it was a human thing. You should not insult the brutes by such a misuse of that word. They have not deserved it, and he went on talking like that. He is like your paltry race, always lying, always claiming virtues which it hasn't got, always denying them to the higher animals, which alone possess them. No brute ever does a cruel thing that is the monopoly of those with the moral sense. When a brute inflicts pain, he does it innocently. It is not wrong. For him there is no such thing as wrong. And he does not inflict pain for the pleasure of inflicting it, only man does that. Inspired by that mongrel moral sense of his, a sense whose function is to distinguish between right and wrong, with liberty to choose which of them he will do. Now what advantage can he get out of that? He is always choosing, and in 9 cases out of 10 he prefers the wrong. There shouldn't be any wrong. And without the moral sense there couldn't be any. And yet he is such an unreasoning creature that he is not able to perceive that the moral sense degrades him to the bottom layer of animated beings and is a shameful possession. Are you feeling better? Let me show you something. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.